This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
This is iFanboy Media Splode, episode 45, the 2024 Oscars reaction, and what should we watch next?
Doesn't seem to matter what I do. I'm always number two. No one knows how hard I tried. Oh, oh, I have feelings that I can't explain. Driving me insane. All my life been so polite, but I'll sleep alone tonight.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Media Splode. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I am here with Josh Flanagan.
Hi there.
And Ron Richards.
Let's press play, fellas. That's my new catchphrase, by the way. Let's press play, comma, fellas.
Delightfully retro.
Yeah, there you go.
Get the t-shirt ready.
I'm turning into a thing. Let's press play, fellas.
It's our monthly Media Splode show, unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/fanboy. Thanks for being a patron, and hopefully you consider being one today. They unlocked this show, or this is a show where we talk about non-comic book media as opposed to our regular suite of comic book podcasts, which you can all check out at ifanboy.com. They're all there, all the shows.
What happened was is that we had a legion of supporters on Patreon who rose up and together in unison said, let's press play, fellas.
I don't hate it. It's growing on me.
See, there you go. That's what happens.
It's like a virus.
It isn't good, but it's being repeated a lot.
All right, so we have actually a bunch to do this month. We got a lot of things to talk about, but we'll start as we always do with the segment that kicks off the show. What have we been enjoying since we last spoke? And I'll start. I went to 5 films in 3 weeks since we last spoke.
Cool.
That's more than one a week.
Yes, they were all revivals. The New Beverly Theater here in Los Angeles that Ron has been to. We went to see The Godfather there the last time you were.
Yep.
Not the last time you were around, but
I've seen several movies there.
I went to a double feature of Casablanca and Before Sunset. It was a We'll Always Have Paris double feature. And then the next weekend, I saw It Happened One Night and The Awful Truth. And then the weekend after that, I saw Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And I wanted to really, I mean, I love all these films. Casablanca is my all-time favorite film. I haven't seen Before Sunset in a long time, and I was just sort of enraptured by it because you just don't see movies like that anymore, really.
Oh, I know. It's a shame.
I just had such a good time watching it. It Happened One Night is an all-time classic. Frank Capra, it was the first film to win the top 5 Oscars. Picture, director, actor, actress, screenplay. And The Awful Truth is just a terrific screwball Cary Grant comedy. But Ferris Bueller, I saw it was on a Sunday. It was a 2 o'clock matinee show. It was 98% sold out, it seemed like. And I've seen that movie dozens of times.
Hundreds of times. Yeah, a lot of times.
Or even just parts of it. It's on TV. I'll watch 30 minutes. Like, I know that movie very, very well, but I'd never seen it in a theater before.
Oh, interesting.
And I know that we talk about this all the time, and I know that some of our listeners don't like to hear it, and they don't agree, and that's totally fine. There's nothing better than seeing a movie in the theater. I've seen this movie dozens of times. I laughed my ass off because the whole theater was laughing their ass off.
Yeah.
And when you're in a room with 200 other people and you're all laughing together, you laugh kind of like you've never seen it before. And after the movie, my wife was like, wow, you laughed so much. And I was like, it was just a great experience. It's a funny movie. It's a terrific comedy. But to see it in a group, and a lot of people had never seen it before, which was really funny because I think at one point, you know, when Rooney's breaking into the house, the woman behind me was like, oh, no, she didn't know what was going to happen.
So it was just nice.
She also thought it was a drama.
Imagine the opportunity to have selective amnesia of a movie like that and see it for the first time in a theater.
That would be great.
To be able to erase the experience you have with it, to know every line that's coming up, right? And then be able to experience it like that for the first time.
You think it'd be a bit of that. I mean, if you haven't seen a movie in a really long time, even though in your head you know it really well, you watched a lot as a teenager or something. During the pandemic, I went and saw Raiders of the Lost Ark in the theater, and yeah. I hadn't actually watched it in forever. So, you know, that big, that experience, having been that long, there was a lot of it that felt, you know, really fresh. You know, yeah. You know, I don't know it beat for beat like I did like The Godfather or something. Uh-huh. I can't think of a single situation where I have gone to a, you know, theater release of some movie that I, you know, that I know or have loved in the past and it wasn't fantastic.
Yeah, it's always
I can't even think of me going and being like, I didn't really need to do that. It's never happened.
Any opportunity to do that, it's funny because you say Ferris Bueller because I have one of those pop culture children's book editions of
it. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that because when I did a thing where instead of, because every time I travel, my kids expect me to come home with a toy. And then I went to Chicago and I was like, I'm not bringing toys home anymore. I'm bringing books about the place I visited.
Mm. I did that.
And so one of them I did was like, you know, points, you know, it was like a touristy book about Chicago. And the other one, I'm like, and my daughter loves it. And I can't wait until she's old enough to show her the movie and to be like, to Bridget. It's funny that you saw it, though, because I've like literally just like 2 weeks ago, I read her the book and was thinking about the movie again. I haven't seen it for years, but I've been very, very lucky living, you know, in New York metro area, living in San Francisco, Connor, you're in LA, to have access to theaters that will do that.
Yeah.
I'm out here on Long Island outside of New York City now. And luckily the town over from me, there's a great theater called the Cinema Arts Center that literally like they ran American Fiction. They ran like the heavy hitter first release films, but they have three other theaters where they're showing The Third Man this week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You know, like it's really, and now it's not as nice as the experience of the New Beverly or an Alamo or whatever. It's been around since I was, you know, in school, but it's like, it's such a great resource. And I recognize that not every city in the country has this, right? The ability to see these movies that aren't regularly shown in theaters. But if you get the opportunity to, I agree with you, Connor, you got to do it because there's nothing better.
We're very lucky that we get to do that. There's towns with no theaters at all. And so the fact that we have theaters that not only show old movies, but any movie is almost a luxury at this point. But yeah, you're right. I'm heartbroken. I'm going to be out of town and they're showing Field of Dreams that weekend and I'm not going to be here. And I'm just like,
it's going to be packed this year. Yeah.
I just wanted to go. So
well, I know. Yes. Yeah. Speaking of that, I, the nice Oscars reference, but Kimmel's joke during the Oscars about how they were an hour and a half into the award show and said, if this is an AMC theater, the movie would just be starting.
Yes. Yes.
Did yes, that's to Nicole true. Kidman.
Josh, you go next.
All right. A couple of quick ones then. I saw a promo for this Shogun program.
Oh, yes.
I haven't started watching it yet. Don't spoil it.
I'm not. I've only
watched. I know the story, but it's fine.
I never. I vaguely remember when I was little, like the miniseries that was on, you know, ABC or whatever it was.
Well, I mean, we were explaining to somebody at my Oscar party about that, who was younger than us, that, and people may not know that it was a. I mean, the book was physically huge. It was like 2,500 pages, but everyone had this book. Like, if I went to somebody's house on their parents' bookshelf was Shogun.
All
like
parents had, and I remember when the first Shogun series happened because I didn't know what it was, but I remember my mother being excited because she had read the book and was excited that there was a TV show about it.
Plus Richard Chamberlain.
Yeah, of course.
All mothers loved him.
Yeah.
And as a very, you know, I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting, but also this little thing, you know, in my head was like, I bet that's not very authentic. I don't know if I added that later, but, you know, like it just, all that stuff didn't look kind of as good as things do now. They're not quite as committed to, we do realism. We do, I don't know what realism, but we do something that feels a little more authentic. Maybe it isn't. Anyway, modern production values, sort of the idea of trying to get cultures right. So I saw that promo and I was like, oh man, that's exciting to me. Because one of the things is, if you pay attention to sort of you know, when I talk about history books that I'm reading or things like that, I really like sort of recreations of this sort of period where we are on the edge of modernity, you know, and so this cultures come together and technology comes together, and it's fascinating thing. Anyway, I watched the other night, like I found myself, I don't know, like my wife went to bed early or something, and I was like, what am I going to do? And I haven't been playing video games at all lately, which is helpful. And I sort of flipped on Hulu and it was right there. And I was like, yes, because I had no, I could just pay attention to it because it's half subtitles and things like that. And also, in addition to having been like, I've been reading a lot of those Aubrey Matron books and things like that. So there was like an element of, I'm trying to think of what you call the era, 17th century mariners, something like that. Mm-hmm. It was really great looking. You get an expansive idea about what these cities might have looked like at the time, you know, because they're real good with digital effects now. I didn't read the book. I didn't know about this. I don't know how the earlier one was, but there was a lot about like, the Spanish Catholics hate the other Protestants. And so like they're fighting amongst each other to try to get the honor of the shoguns, and all those people are infighting. And that's just how you enter the program. Like it's all set up. There's a lot of conflict already in place. And you kind of don't know who's good or who's bad or who you should root for. And it was pretty great. I kind of can't wait to find time to watch the next one.
It's getting rave reviews everywhere.
Yeah, this is like, it's getting compared to Game of Thrones. And like,
oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it FX has another hit on their hands in terms of this. And it's likely, you know, with the downfall of prestige TV that we're going through right now, stuff like that, they're wondering if they'll ever do something as expansive as this. Because apparently, you know, it's a huge production and it's been in development since before the pandemic, right? Like it's right. Been a huge kind of thing to get out the door finally. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see what they do with it because it is a self-contained story, right?
Yeah,
it's a miniseries.
Right, no, I know. But like, if it does become a huge hit as a la Game of Thrones, do they try to expand on it, you know, or mm-hmm. not? Probably not, but it's still, but you know,
probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
It's probably very expensive.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and that's the thing is whenever somebody does an expensive historical epic, and then, you know, if it's another country, it's even more so, kind of want to root for it because I want them to keep making things like this. And so sure. Like a couple of them fail in a way of like people don't like this stuff, and then we're not doing
it's just love
again.
Is blind as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah. It,
well,
exactly.
I mean hopefully, I mean with what FX has done, I think, over the past couple of years, and Landgraf is in leading it, they maintain a level of commitment. Yep. Probably to like those kind of projects, and hopefully that continues on in that channel, and Lord knows what's going on in various corporate machinations and all that sort of stuff. But you know, I think a lot of the doom saying of prestige TV is a little ham-fisted in a certain degree, just because people, you know, it's like we build it up and then tear it down. You know, I do think, you know, a lot of it, you know, and I know Connor, I'm sure, you know, you and I listen to the same podcasts and read the same articles, but like coming out of the strike, you know, you're going to see budgets constrict.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Get ready for a lot more like cop and doctor TV shows, you know, go back to like, you know, the tried and true, you know, network kind of model, but there will always be a place for something that like is an event and knocks your socks off. And
one of the things that's cool about it though, is that since the HBO era, we'll call it, say, so, you know, 2000, sort of that early period of the, you know, our new golden age of TV. Usually when something is this expensive and quote unquote prestigious, they're usually pretty good now. Like they're not, you know, clunkers.
Yeah.
When they put that much into it, there's enough smart people now. We've seen enough good TV, which is not always the case with movies. With movies, you can do a big, giant historical epic, and that's
The
Last Samurai wasn't great. And Napoleon's problems were different. We can talk about them.
I need to watch it still. I need to watch it still.
It's not the time. Yeah. It's a different thing, though. But with TV.
More complex, yeah.
With TV, like, you don't see HBO go out there and spend $1 billion on a show that is just badly written. They get a lot of it.
They haven't had a ton. They don't have a 100% track record.
No, but the track record's a lot better
than
it was.
Sure, it is a lot better.
We grew up
like,
in the 70s and 80s.
Well, what about, yeah.
A big prestige miniseries wasn't necessarily well acted.
Totally, but like, for every Sopranos, there's a Carnival. Right.
People and, love
right,
but if you look,
right, they do. Yeah, they do. Or True Detective season 2.
Yeah, but a lot of those shows that were.
What was that terrible expensive? Surfer one? John from Cincinnati.
Oh, John from Cincinnati. Yeah, yeah. But all of those weren't like. Some of them were good, but didn't find an audience, or they were before their time, or it just was too niche or whatever. Like you could watch John from Cincinnati, and it wasn't like hammy and crappy. It was just too experimental and weird. Carnival was a good show. No one watched it.
Most recently, whatever that Idol show was a mess.
Disaster, yeah.
Yeah. right? And there's a whole bunch of shows that have fallen out of the
ether. Yeah, like
Camping. Do you remember Camping with Jennifer Garner and David Tennant?
No.
Or Here and Now. Tim Robbins, Holly Hunter, and Alan Ball.
But that's the other side of all this, is that we can't keep up with the good stuff. And right. So therefore the bad stuff, you just miss. You forget it.
Completely. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And maybe it's not bad. I mean, I don't know. But I'm guessing if it was amazing, everyone would know about it.
Yeah, I think the point is, though, that there's always been bad stuff, though.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
We also, what happened to vinyl, right?
Yeah.
You know, as much as I love Bobby Cannavale.
Was it as good as we wanted it to be?
It got collectively worse as that show went on.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, wow, this is cool. And they kind of couldn't hold it together. But I don't even, like, I don't know if that counts as prestige. I mean, wasn't that just what they
Martin
did?
Martin Scorsese was the scratch
producer. You're right. That's fair. I think all
there's always been bad stuff in the prestige era. There was good stuff before the prestige era.
There's always going to be bad stuff as much as there's going to be good stuff.
Right. No, I'm not saying, I'm saying, because we're calling it the prestige era. Like, for a while, that was what we expected of dramas. They were all, you know, they were spending a lot more money on them and being much more specific with us. So we talk about those prestige shows as opposed to a hospital drama on NBC.
Right.
It feels like a higher hit rate.
Yeah.
Did you just slander ER?
Listen, ER was the most popular show on television for like years.
Listen, motherfuckers, you know, I'm talking about all the other, like they do the one good ER or Saint Elsewhere, and then there's, you know, nine antecedents that are forgettable and terrible.
I saw on some fucking feed, I saw a time lapse of a bar graph of the top 10 shows on TV across all networks and the audience size.
Starting
in like 1990 until present day. And it was really fascinating to see like ER rise to the top and just stay there for years. And then Seinfeld go up and stay there for years. And The Sopranos and stay there. Then Game of Thrones, right? Then Yellowstone, right? Right. Yeah, just if I can dig it up, I'll send it to you guys. It was really fascinating.
Please do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I do want to check out Shogun. It's
me too, yeah. It's on my list.
Everyone I know who's watching, it was a topic of conversation at the party last night, people who were watching it.
We're going to talk about it later in the show because it's on my list.
Just real quick, because we've been reading for our books, we've been reading the Philippe Scorzon, that adaptation of Homicide, which is the book by David Simon. That book went on to become the show Homicide, and then he did The Wire and blah, blah, blah. And a while back, they released a program on HBO called We Own This City, and I watched half of it. My wife lost interest, and I forgot about it. And so reading this, I was like, wait a minute, I never finished that. And so I went back, and I sort of completed the series, and I really like it. It has a lot of what David Simon does into this really good. It is a way to get to see a bunch of Wire actors who you haven't seen for a while. And I can't figure out why it doesn't quite seem to work in the same way. It's almost like it's too documentary-like than it is.
Well, it's a true story. So you're then constrained by the, you know, I want to say in quotes, what actually happened, because it's a dramatization. Right. But, you know, The Wire, he can use it to make any allegory he wants about anything, whereas he's got to stay somewhat.
I get it. There's lots of shows. It's just like they handled it very, very straightforward and journalism-like. So all that being said, I really enjoyed it. It kind of breaks your heart at the end. You finished it, Connor? Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
As I'm watching it, and I think this every single time I see John Bernthal in something, we have to accept that this is one of our great American actors now. Like, it's a name I don't think of because he blends in so well with everything.
He's very good in that show.
I can do anything. Yeah. He's amazing on that show. You know, he's one of the only recognizable people in it other than Josh Charles, who is also great. But I'm also just comparing John Bernthal in that to John Bernthal in something else and in something else. And I kind of realized, God, I've seen him in so many things. And he takes on so many different personas, or if he was in Baltimore, personas.
Remember, he was a sleazy corporate guy in Ford versus Ferrari.
I think of that a lot as the
totally different type of role than he was in that show. Totally different type of role than he was in The Walking Dead. Todd did it in The Punisher. Like, he can do all kinds of different things. He does angry, you know, aggro guys very, very well.
Leo DiCocco was not.
No, that's what I'm saying. Also, he's heartbreaking in The Bear. Like, you know,
he's just amazing. Like, I don't know if we ever open the books again, but we'd have to talk about it. I'm saying.
All right.
I'm really glad I went back. I mean, you only get so much of the sort of genius of David Simon. And
who knows how much rope he gets now under the new regime at HBO, you know?
At least a couple, that's a mess.
Yeah, which is how you can explain the Idol show, by the way. That was them trying to be cool.
Ugh. On my side, briefly on TV, we've caught up and finished All the Slow Horses. Fantastic. Finished Mr. and Mrs. Smith on Amazon. Very, very good. Possibly one of the best shows of the year so far. But really, the biggest thing in terms of what I've watched since we last spoke that kind of stuck with me is I went opening weekend, Saturday night in the theater, Dune 2.
Everyone's raving about it.
And I got to say, I went in a little, not, I don't want to say skeptical, but a little like, all right, settle down, folks, right? Because it was,
really?
You know, yeah, well, because all the hype coming into the previews, I'm hearing people talk about, I'm hearing Empire Strikes Back being thrown about, right? And like all this sort of stuff. I don't subscribe to that. What I do subscribe to is that it just looks fucking stunning. Yeah. Villeneuve, or however you pronounce it, sorry.
Villeneuve. Did a pretty good job there.
Close.
I was reading about it and heard about, like, tried to shoot as much in natural light as possible. So that they would have to, if they didn't get the shot one day, they just have to wait and then do the pickup tomorrow. Like, drove the crew crazy, apparently. But like, it just looks epic and is fantastic. Dune is really, really hard to adapt, as we all know.
You should make a movie about that.
David Lynch knows and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, yeah, they made accommodations and made adjustments to the original text and stuff like that, as they always do. I thought they worked for the most part. And you guys haven't seen it yet, right?
No. I wanted to, but I need to rewatch part one because it was 3 years ago.
I didn't find myself not needing to. I don't know, but I just, yeah.
I'm not a huge Dune guy, though. You've read the books.
No, I read the books like in seventh grade. So I read, yeah. So
I want to say that I'm going to watch the other one before I see it, but I'm not. I'm not going to. But I am going
to
go see
it. And I wouldn't say you even need to. Like, once you get in it, it kind of clicks back and you understand.
Like, I get that, like, they ended up on the planet.
Right. Worms.
A bunch of people could die. There's different people they're fighting. The natives.
Worms.
Are going to fight back against the rich people who colonized it. Yeah. Got it. Like, it's not.
I will save my one criticism until you guys see it so that we can speak on the same level about it. But best movie so far of the year that I've seen, not, you know, again, it's March, but like huge in scope. Just, it was just like, didn't feel long. Everything worked to a certain degree. So yeah, really two thumbs up about it.
They're showing it in 70 IMAX here.
Oh, well, I don't want to see IMAX. I want to see 70, but not IMAX. Ooh.
I got to get to the theater.
Projected up to the IMAX screen.
220?
220, 221, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
That's actually a good segue. Speaking of Michael Keaton.
He was fantastic.
We're recording this the day after for the 96th Academy Awards, aired last night, and it did well. 19.5 million viewers, up 4%. I thought it would do a little bit better, but it's a lot. Ron and I are, you know, amateur Oscarologists. I thought it was a terrific show.
I thought it was very good.
I thought it was a really fun show. Like, I don't think it was perfect. Those shows are never perfect. They're too big to be perfect. But I thought, on the whole, it was incredibly entertaining and incredibly fun to watch. Everyone at the party had a great time watching it. Everyone I talked to today really enjoyed watching it.
I thought it moved quickly. It never felt draggy. I will say I liked seeing the other actors when they did the nominees for the big awards for the supporting and best actor awards, but I didn't like not seeing any clips. Like, they were very low
clips. Exactly my reaction was this same thing happened with the Emmys, where they didn't show any acting clips. It's like, the entire thing is just, this is an advertisement for your projects. Like, you want people to see them. And so the best way to do that is to show the clips. I don't know why they didn't do that.
It was funny, 'cause I was reading a review of the show. I forgot, either in the Times or the THR or something like that. They were praising the show, saying it was rightly balanced. There weren't a lot of boring montages, whatever. Like, I tune in for the montages. Like,
I love the montages.
That random stuntman montage that had the Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt, comedic moment beforehand. Like, I wanted more of that, right? Because I want to celebrate the movies type thing. But
I'm here for the montages. I'm here for the clips. Like, it just seems bizarre. I liked seeing this. I thought it worked really well. But then I think they needed to throw the clips.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the whole thing is star power, right? So this allowed them to bring a lot more stars to the showcase. Big people. Like, our crowd went nuts when Nick Cage showed up and did his weird Nick Cage stuff.
My couch for Sam Rockwell.
McConaughey, everyone, Sally Field, people were like excited to see these people. And I think that was a really good job of that. It's just that you also need to be able to showcase, why do these roles garner this attention? Show us a little bit.
Yeah.
That's just bizarre to me. But I thought it was good. I thought, you know, Ryan Gosling's performance, I thought all the songs were really interesting and good. You know, the Billie Eilish song is terrific. I thought the performance from Killers of the Flower Moon, was the whole party shut up during it. Like, it quieted down. It was mesmerizing. And then the Ken bit brought the house down. I thought it was, the music side really worked as well.
Yeah. I thought it was great. I thought it was a really good show. I thought the Mulaney's 3 minutes stand-up bit was great.
There were good bits.
Yeah.
The whole Michael Keaton Batman bit was really funny.
Yep.
I thought the Gosling Emily Blunt bit was good. Mulaney's bit was good. Mulaney's definitely on the host track.
Yep.
I don't know what he's doing with his hair right now, but...
Yeah, I said to my wife, too. I'm like, I just want him to get a haircut. Like,
I said, Mulaney, it's a guy who we went from looking 20 to looking 40 and no time passed.
Right.
Well, yeah.
It was an instant, like, whoa, Like, I mean, listen, he earned it. He went through it.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, but, you know, like, his whole thing was like he looked 17, and I was like, oh, that's parenthood for you.
Yeah.
And the cocaine.
And cocaine.
Yeah, I know. You gotta let me hit the joke.
Yeah, well, overall, yeah, I thought it was good. So, Connor, you got 18 out of 23, right?
That's right. I won three pools I was in.
Congratulations. I was at one behind you at 17 and kicking myself because Saturday I changed three categories and changed them to the wrong one. So I would have had a 20, but I ended up with a 17.
I do want to congratulate our patron winners. We had a patron Oscar pool. Ilan Prisgovsky, Ryan Mountain, Zach Field all had 20 out of 23.
Good job.
For first place. So congratulations. This is the sixth year in a row we've done a patron Oscar pool, and people seem to really enjoy doing it. So it's fun.
Yeah. I have fun putting it together for y'all. And, you know, we have such a great time, you know, handicapping it and figuring it all 91% out.
91% of the people chose director correctly.
Nice. Very cool.
Yeah.
I won't say much about it, but there's two things I wanted to note. During the In Memoriam.
It was really bad.
Really bad.
Fucking shots on camera.
Yeah.
I don't care about them singing.
I don't care about the dancers. Show me the fucking people.
And they started to zoom. And then, like, afterwards, the singers, that was the guy who did the song, right? Like
Andrea Bocelli.
Right. Yeah. And and they were like holding their hands up like they were being, I was like, no, you're not the point of that at all. But, and then they start to zoom in and then they tilt the camera away. I was like, what is this? I was super annoyed.
The worst I've seen in a while, and it's been really bad for a long time. They don't seem to understand. People just want to watch the clips and not the performers.
I had to strain to see the names behind them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was like they were an afterthought, which is like the exact opposite it's supposed to be. I say this every year, but the Turner Classic Movie Channel does an amazing In Memoriam every year, and they should just have them do it.
Yeah.
Go a little longer than 5 minutes. The show was like not that long this year either. They cut out a lot of people, which happens, but like the worst crime was putting them not even behind the singer, but behind the singer, behind the dancer. Like it was like the third level back on the screen.
I mean, it was very much for people in the room.
Yeah.
And it wasn't for people watching the broadcast. And that's the balance that you got to do. And they balanced it in the wrong direction, at least
poorly.
For us at home.
Very poor.
Yeah.
Then there was some ad, and I'm trying to remember what it was, but it basically like it called out that Greta Gerwig wasn't up for Best Director.
It was some that? Drink, wasn't it? Like celebrating the great. They did a play on words with great and Greta.
Right. Right. Yes, I was like, I've never seen anything like that. That's amazing. Unfortunately, I don't remember the product.
I thought Cord Jefferson's speech was fantastic.
Yes.
The writer of American Fiction.
Speeches were good, too.
Yeah. Speeches
on the whole. I thought the documentarian to one for 20 Days of Maripol was devastating.
Yeah.
Yep. I thought Divine Joy Randolph's speech was really great. I thought Downey really nailed what he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
I thought the speeches on the whole were really, I think on the whole it was good. And the Godzilla guys were great. They had a little Godzilla with them. You know, there was the dog that everybody loves.
Yeah, it was all in all was good. I thought Kimmel was good. Kimmel was fine.
He's a consummate Oscar host.
Yeah. I mean, it made me laugh a couple of times. You know, like I don't watch a show. I'm not a huge fan of him, but like I'll give him credit. Like some jokes definitely hit.
Yeah. Enjoyable. Really good.
Yeah, enjoyed it. So switch some gears. I wanted to more of a little bit of a discussion thing because sometimes we talk about music here on the show because the show is celebrating all things media and all three of us enjoy music, albeit in probably in different ways, different types. But, you know, I was scrolling through my social media and the state of the music industry being what it is with Spotify and royalties being so low and stuff like that seems like playing live is one of the best not only ways to experience music, but ways for musicians to make money these days, right? You know, in terms of touring and the fees they get for playing and then also merch and all that fun stuff. And even pre-pandemic, you know, there's a great history of the music festival, right? Whether it's, you know, like we grew up with Lollapalooza is the big one that celebrated kind of alternative music. The past couple of years, you've got, you know, Outside Lands in San Francisco or Bonnaroo in Tennessee, or what's the one in the Northwest?
I don't know.
Bumbershoot or whatever it is something that's called. Yeah. And you've got those like kind of music festivals that are somewhat eclectic. Well, like or Coachella, right? That's the big one where we see the, you know, the kind of the social media graphic of the lineup and the headliners and then all the way down and you decide what bands you want to go see. But what I thought was interesting was the past couple of years that I know that I myself have fallen into this and Josh, I've dragged you along at least once, but to the more Lollapalooza-esque genre specific festival. Right. Like I've gone to Riot Fest in Chicago for the past 10 years or so. And that is generally more of a, I don't want to specifically define it as punk, but you know, like punk, hardcore, underground, leaning towards alternative. The headliners, they get The Cure and Jane's Addiction and things like that. But like leaning more towards on the kind of music I like. The other day, I was scrolling through social media and I saw in the span of 30 seconds, I saw two upcoming music festivals, and I'm going to share with you guys what the music festival is and then the artists that are listed on it. Okay.
Are these new festivals or are they old festivals?
I had never heard of them, so I think they're new. I mean, who knows what they are? But they might have been. So if they are an annual one I didn't know about, it's fine. So the first one was the See Here Now Festival in Asbury Park, New Jersey.
Okay.
Okay. This is on September 14th to the 15th. So Saturday, the headliner is Noah Kahan.
Okay.
I've seen this one.
Who I'd never heard of from like 2 or 3 months ago, and now he's fucking headline.
He's headlining another
one of
these.
Big deal now, yeah.
Because like the two other days were like people I knew, and I was like, who the fuck is this?
Because I'll juxtapose it. Well, because he's the headliner on Saturday, and the headliner on Sunday is Bruce Springsteen in the E Street Band. Right?
There's a problem here.
Right. So now, but to go down one line, so on Saturday, the next line of artists is the Black Crowes.
All right.
311 and the Revivalists. All right. I don't know who the Revivalists are. I'm sure they're good. I do know who 311 is, and I do know who Black Crowes are. Maybe I could see a world where they're kind of in the same place, right? Then you go down. I'm not going to read every artist, but you go down to the next levels, and the Hives, Guster.
The Hives, a Fat Records band from Europe.
They're one of the Europe black suit, white tie bands from the, mid 2000s, which I never liked. Well, but the Hives, Guster. And Peaches. Now, I don't know if you know Peaches, but Peaches is not like if you know Peaches, then it's not aligned with
Guster. You know Peaches? I know Peaches.
So I'll leave it there. So then Sunday, the headliner is Bruce Springsteen, the E Street Band. The second line, Norah Jones, the Trey Anastasio Band,
Fish,
and the Gaslight Anthem.
Punkish.
Right?
This is a weird festival.
Beneath that, it's Action Bronson. Go-Go Bordello.
That's weird.
And Kool and the Gang.
What is happening?
I don't know, right? So that's one of them.
Something for everyone, a comedy tonight.
The second one is in Portland, Oregon, July 27th, 28th. It's called Project Pabst, and it's presented by Pabst Blue Ribbon, right? It's this whole kind of thing. Saturday headliner, Billy Idol. Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
The Sunday headliner, Big Thief.
Never heard of that.
No idea who that is, right? Okay, the Saturday second line headliners, The Gossip, right? Mid-2000s, you know, popularity. Mm. T-Pain.
Okay.
And the Violent Femmes. Okay.
This is weird.
On Sunday, the sub-headliners, Denzel Curry, who I don't know who that is, but Manchester Orchestra. And then beneath that is Jeff Rosenstock, Soccer Mommy, and Military Gun. My whole thing is just like... Like, kudos to the people who are booking these, to the booking agents, to bring together this kind of eclectic kind of stuff. But what is the theme? What is the curation?
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Right? And then finally, the last one I wanted to, I can't read all of them, but like, there's a big festival in Kentucky called Bourbon and Beyond, September 19th to the 22nd in Louisville, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's like 100 bands playing. I'm not going to read them all, but I'm going to pull a couple highlights here. Dave Matthews Band, Neil Young, Beck, Matchbox 20, The National, The Beach Boys.
But not really.
So it's like normies and their parents?
Melissa Etheridge, Chris Isaak, Lyle Lovett, Sunny Day Real Estate, Dinosaur Jr.
So this is a Gen X.
Suzanne
potpourri.
Vega. Like, it's Soul Asylum, M. Ward.
Yeah, this is a Gen X potpourri festival.
So like my question to you guys is like, what's going on?
It sounds like they're trying to get as many different disparate audiences to buy tickets.
I think there's that. This is a couple of things. One, the genre barriers have been greatly broken down since our old days. So the idea of like a whole punk festival for people who like, you know, like whatever Riot Fest was, or there's one in California.
Oh, yeah. Or like, I mean, honestly, like someone's going to write in and say, oh, well, like, you know, Best Friends Forever, that festival that's got Bright Eyes, Sunny Day, Cap and Jazz, Braid, that's targeted at me. Or Josh, we've been talking the No Values Festival with Misfits and Social D and Bad Religion. And like that one's
amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not how most people do it anymore. And certainly if like
how Dad did it.
Younger people still listen to some of the older music, and I don't know what the fucking streams look like. Maybe there is some demographic data similarity to those that we would never get, but I assume there's something to it. You can't just throw a festival willy-nilly.
I mean, what blows my mind at least is that recently I was having a conversation with someone about live music and shows and stuff like that, and when I was growing up when we were growing up in the 90s, at least for me in the underground music world, like admittedly, I went to like punk and hardcore shows and indie rock music shows and stuff like that. But like you had incredibly eclectic bills, right? It was, you know, a hardcore band would be headlining, and the band played before them could be a ska band, and the band that before them could be a shoegaze band, and the band before them could be a grindcore band, right? And no four of those bands sounded the same. And what happened was is that at some point in the last 25 years, you had a sameness kind of happen where a headliner would be booked and there would be like one or two or three openers that were just copycats or directly from the same genre. And I find myself, kind of saying, well, that's I don't want to see just four bands of the same kind of thing. I liked it when there was like kind of a mix. But then I look at these bills.
You're like, but I don't want that.
Yeah. On one hand, I want to celebrate the diversity. But on the other hand, it just feels like you just shook up a bunch of marbles in a bag and threw them on the table. And it was like, here you go. Right. Like this.
The 50s and 60s tours, they just threw everybody on a bus. And it was like every kind
or like,
of.
Or you think about Woodstock, right? Like Woodstock.
Yeah.
There was a ton of diversity at Woodstock. So like maybe this is like trying to wrap my head around the approach of like, yeah, we're going to get Bruce Springsteen and Gogo Bordello on the same stage in the same day. Like that blows my mind.
Maybe Bruce loves Gogo Bordello.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess my question to you guys is that what do you look for out of a music festival? Or what do you look for out of, because is that something you would attend? Would you go to that?
What I want is maximum value. I want to see the most bands who I would like to see. I'm probably not going to go to a show for discovery much at this point. Now, I have my unifying theory, it's my theory, that there's two different kinds of concert goers. There's the people who, I don't like going to shows where someone's had like one or two big hits, because a lot of that audience is going to be there to hear the songs they know and to quote unquote have a good time.
Right.
That means they want to have beers, they want to hang out with their friends. It's a little more like a party.
Where the music is just a backdrop.
That's right. It's part of it. You're going to get a lot more people talking there. They're going to be up and down constantly, getting drinks and kind of hanging out. And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily, because it's probably what the majority of people are like. But like, there's a reason, like, I love going to see Superchunk, because there's going to be anybody there who isn't there because they want to see that band, or a band like that. And that used to be like, oh, these are punk rock, but it's not that. It's about, like a sort of dedicated audience to somebody who wasn't really all that popular, didn't have hits, and so they're there for the music. They're not there for a party with music.
Right.
And that's the difference to me. And these maybe, for a while, I think all the festivals have been for people like me, but maybe now it's festivals for people who want to go to a party.
Yeah.
It's my best guess.
Yeah. I don't have the answers.
Are these outdoor festivals?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They all are. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The thing with an outdoor festival is it's hard to be only about the music, because the sound isn't contained as well.
Right.
You've got the weather to deal with. It's like, it's a whole big thing. It's not just
not a riot fest.
there could be rain. There's, it's a different feel than seeing a band in a venue.
Yep.
I think that just sort of encourages more of a hangout atmosphere.
Yeah. No, and that's true. But other than like in the last 20 years, I've only been to one festival. It was a riot fest. And then like you'd go to see the show, but it was big enough so that if you weren't at one of the shows, it didn't really conflict with the people who were, if that makes sense. Maybe that's why this doesn't really work at all. I don't know. Maybe people are just much more, I'm sure there's data that supports that people's tastes are much more eclectic than I'm guessing we're giving them credit for. That's my guess.
And part of me wonders looking at like the Best Friends Forever Festival or the No Values one, like, which is just very specific drowning in genre. Right. Versus an eclectic, the bourbon one, which is just like you can turn around and see, Chris Isaak at the same time as Dinosaur Jr. I'm not saying one is better than the other or one is the way to go or not. But it's like, I know, at least for myself, I've become very, to your point, Josh, in that value kind of proposition is that I want to zoom in on the ones that I care about. Right. And just exist in what I like, which is crazy. I don't know. I just saw those bills and I was like, what is going on? I thought it was very funny. That said, while also on music, Josh, I don't know if you're having the same upcoming spring as I have, but I've got nothing but shows coming up over the next 2 months. Like once April hits, like everyone is touring.
I've got some. Yeah. I didn't go overboard because in a post-pandemic world, I'm a little like, oh, that's a lot of hassle, which is old and wrong of me, I know. But I definitely have a bunch. I've missed some because I was just out of the... I mean, like literally, like I had tickets to Dinosaur Jr. and I literally like didn't know. I was like, wait, shit, that was last Saturday and I didn't remember to go.
Oh, you got to put them on your calendar, man. You got to do. That's what I
usually do. It's just
But you had tickets and you didn't go?
That night we had a hangout. So I showed up for that.
You had tickets for the show and didn't go?
I didn't realize it until Like I bought them like very quickly. Like, you know, they did the big tour where they did Where You Been?
Yeah, I went. Yeah.
This was their hometown sort of like Shake the Rust Off show. And I was supposed to go to it. And I bought the tickets like while I was out. You know what I mean? Like I was like, oh, the tickets are on sale. And I just bought one. And then
out of the usual process. Right?
Yeah. Never thought about it again.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gearing up for from April into June. It's just it's like almost like every weekend there's something going on, which is great because like it's like old times. But we will see. But yeah, there you go. There's your music minute.
All right. So on last month's episode, Ron offhandedly mentioned that we talk a lot about shows we want to watch. We just haven't watched yet or for whatever reason we haven't gotten around to it. And Ron mentioned, oh, we should do a thing on the next show where we talk about some shows that are on our to watch list. And then the other guys will make a choice for you and you have to watch it. So that's what we're doing now. It's a game we call the What Should We Watch Next Challenge.
I love it. I know I'm different than you guys in that I have an app where I keep track of the shows I watch, but part of that is that whenever I see a show that I either hear about or want to watch, I flag it and it organizes it very nicely for me in terms of like, it tells me when the next episode of the shows I'm watching are, and then it has a whole section of haven't started yet. Mm-hmm. So I was going to read to you guys the shows on my haven't started yet list, and you guys pick when I have an opening to watch next, which is very soon because we're in this gap between shows, what I should watch next.
Well, that's the other thing is at the end of this, we all going to have one show assigned to us and we have to watch at least one episode before the next episode so we can report back on it next month.
Yep. All right. So I will dig in here then. So on my haven't started yet is the aforementioned Shogun on FX, which I feel like shouldn't be in this because it's like so current.
Yeah. None of my shows are current.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds.
Well, no, I mean, like a lot of these are current, like more recent. Like I don't have any deep cuts. Like I've always wanted to watch MASH, you know, like
you should watch MASH.
All right. So on my list, a show on Apple TV Plus that was recommended to me. I forget who recommended it to me. There's one season of it called Bad Sisters.
Okay. It's an Irish show.
And it is a drama comedy. And here's the summary. It's Sharon Horgan from.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
The tight-knit Garvey sisters have always looked out for each other. When their brother-in-law winds up dead, his life insurers launch an investigation to prove malicious intent and set their sights on the sisters, all of whom have ample reason to kill him.
I've watched one episode of that.
Yeah.
For the viewers, Sharon Horgan was in Catastrophe.
That's right.
With Rob Delaney, which was a wonderful show on Amazon, I think. It's probably a British show that Amazon got, but just because we talked about it amongst ourselves.
Yep.
Irish actress.
So actor. Bad Sisters.
Okay.
Also on Apple TV, The Buccaneers.
Oh, okay. Are we allowed to comment on these yet?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Buccaneers, is that the one?
A group of fun-loving American girls burst onto the scene in tightly corseted 1870s
Terrible.
London.
Terrible.
Cool. Okay.
I watched 10 minutes of it and I was like, nope. It's supposed to be old-timey, but all the girls talk like now.
Cool. Okay.
And it has Christina Hendricks in it, so I gave it a shot, but that's I'm realizing
a lot of these are Apple TV Plus, which is interesting. Monarch Legacy of Monsters.
I have that on my list.
The Matt Fraction written Godzilla that focuses on the people of the cities that Godzilla have destroyed.
And it's got Kurt Russell and his son in
it. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Are you a Godzilla person?
Casual.
Right. So yeah, that's kind of like, I've wanted to like Godzilla a lot and I'm still never really stuck.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I know Godzilla, I know Mothra, I know the characters, I've seen some of the movies, I've seen some of the recent ones, I don't have millions of Godzilla toys in my office, you know, like, but anyway.
So I'm sort of with you on that, it's on my list.
Yeah. Casual.
Maybe, of interested, I'm kaiju curious.
Yeah, kaiju curious.
I want to like it, but so far, not really.
Also on Apple TV, very popular Severance.
Okay.
The Adam Scott, John Turturro, workplace, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Moving over to Netflix, The Diplomat, Kerry Russell. I've been told it's like a walk and talk Sorkin-esque political thriller.
Yeah.
Also on Netflix, Bodies.
How many are there?
I'm almost done.
Okay.
Science fiction, one victim found dead on a London street, four detectives in four different time periods must solve the mystery to protect Britain's future.
I think I watched one episode of that and didn't continue.
Yep. And then the last one.
I think I thought I stopped halfway through. I was like, I don't care about this. And I stopped watching.
And then the last one is The Lazarus Project, also on Apple TV Plus. Science fiction also.
Anthology, is it? No.
No, it's not an anthology. It's basically somebody living the same day over and over again.
It's too close to home.
Yeah, Groundhog's Day, science fiction, has saved the world kind of thing. So that's my list. So Bad Sisters, Buccaneers, Monarch Legacy of Monsters, Severance, The Diplomat, Bodies, and The Lazarus Project.
It's really interesting the state that we're in entertainment, especially with television these days, is that there's so many shows that they just come and they go.
Yep.
There was a month where every single day, our friend Mike Romo is telling me to watch The Diplomat. Every single day. Like, you got to watch The Diplomat. You got to watch it. You got to watch it. And then he's not mentioned it ever. And I forgot it existed just because there's it gets buried under all the other things.
What I think is really interesting about this is that all of these seven shows that I just read off have been recommended to me by someone else that I then opened my app and said, okay, I'm going to add that, right? I'll add it to the list, right? And for whatever reason, when given the opportunity to watch something, I've never pulled them out of the slush pile, you know,
right.
For whatever reason. Now, Severance is a hit by all. I mean, people are anxious for the second season, you know, but I haven't been moved enough to press play on it.
Do you have one that sort of stands out as?
No.
On that list? Okay. Josh, what do you think?
Nothing stood out to me as a must watch. Some of them I haven't. I mean, Monarch, because it's on mine and I'm, well,
what,
I'm
what are you in the mood for?
I'm off the book, man. I just want something good, something that I want to.
But do you
watch
want funny? Do you want kaiju? You want funny kaiju?
Clearly, science fiction. You know, I'm into science fiction, right?
Yeah.
But I like short would be nice.
Yeah, I don't know the episode count. We did watch one episode of The Bad Sisters. We liked it and meant to continue and just never did and forgot about it because, again, there's a million things. And I saw it the other day on my continue watching list. I was like, oh, right, that show. And I just kept going.
Well, you guys need to come to consensus here.
You say Monarch, Josh?
Yeah.
All right, let's do Monarch.
All right, Monarch.
We all love Kurt Russell.
All right. Godzilla's hot right now.
I love the original Godzilla film, the one that they edited, I was going to say Perry Mason into, Raymond Burr into. We had that as kids on VHS, and I watched that a lot.
I had a conversation with like a big Godzilla fan, and they were like, the first one is the one.
The original one's a great movie.
Yeah.
And like,
I had a Godzilla toy as a kid.
The Japanese, like, straight up, you know, subtitles if you need them.
All right. So
All right. This is not the time or the place for a Godzilla
Monarch
discussion.
Will be my pick. All right. So, Connor, let's hear your list.
Okay. I have four and a wild card.
All right.
And I'm not counting Shogun. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which I haven't watched yet. Poker Face.
Oh, man.
Hijack. So Mr. and Mrs. Smith is Amazon Prime. Poker Face is Peacock?
Yeah, Peacock. So Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I talked about it last month. Donald Glover and the remake of Maya Erskine.
Yeah, the film.
And then I mentioned it earlier in the show, in fact. Poker Face, Natasha Lyonne on Peacock.
Hijack is the Idris Elba Apple show that Josh loved. Mm-hmm. Drops of God, I decided to throw in there, Ron, after you raved about it.
Yep.
A couple episodes ago, that's on Apple, right? Apple TV Plus. And here's the wild card. Strange New Worlds. Let me tell you why it's a wild card. I made it about four or five episodes in, and I just was like, this is not working for me.
Oh, it's so good.
And I stopped.
It's so
like,
good.
It was fine. I enjoyed it the most of all these.
Here's my question. Would you go back and rewatch those four episodes, or would you pick up where you left off?
I think, I don't know. Maybe I'd have to start again. I don't know.
I don't think you should do that.
Yeah,
it's hard. I think
you have to.
Yeah, my issues with it are deeper though. Like, I don't like any of these new Star Treks, but I want to like it, and everyone I know likes it, and I tried real hard, but after about four or five episodes, I just kind of bored with it and stopped.
It's so good. It gets so good. All right, well, Josh,
let's leave that one off. Well, you guys decide. It's up to you guys.
Based off that, Josh, what are your first gut?
Just read through the list one more time.
Sure. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Poker Face, Hijack, Drops of God, Strange New Worlds. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, action, adventure, romance, Poker Face, detective show. Hijack is the plane. Hijack, action show. Drops of God is the wine. What is it? Mystery? Yeah. What is it?
Yeah.
Is it
wine, what's the genre? Drama.
I'm going to say Hijack because it's British. It's got Idris Elba. It's a potboiler. You're in and out. It's enjoyable. It's not high art, but it's a good time. And knowing your taste, I believe that you would enjoy it.
Interesting. I was going to, oh man, it's really hard to choose because you've got like a list of a lot of my favorite shows.
Yeah, I thought that as you said it. I was like, oh, he's going to want to tell him to do Poker Face. That's what
like,
he's going to want.
Like Poker Face, I think you got to watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith at some point. It's just so good.
Yeah.
Oh man, but Drops of God was so good. I'd be really curious what you think of it. Yeah, I have no interest in Hijack or interest in making you watch Hijack either.
That's fair.
Josh, let's eliminate Hijack. Let's eliminate Poker Face.
Okay.
We'll each sacrifice one, right? So Mr. and Mrs. Smith or Drops of God.
Well, so here's the thing about the game is that he's going to watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Right.
I don't know if I am.
I feel like you are.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Right now, it's my running for best show of the year.
Yeah. I mean, so like just having you said that you're going to watch it.
Yeah.
One way or the other.
So let's do Drops of God.
You know what? Yeah, I don't really care, but I think that it's interesting because I would like to hear his take on what you is one of the strangest recommendations I've ever heard.
That's true. That's true.
So that is interesting to me. So I can get behind that.
Yeah. All right. Drops of God it is.
All right. Cool.
Okay.
Josh.
I'll eliminate newer ones just because So I was going to have Constellation on there, but I am going to watch that. I just need to stick it in there. All right. So, and I'm also going to eliminate Mr. and Mrs. Smith because I'm going to watch
it. Fair.
All right. So I've got All the Light We Cannot See.
What is that?
It is on Netflix. It's got something to do with Nazis, I think.
Yeah. It's based on a novel. It's a Nazi thing.
Yeah.
World War II. It's a Nazi thing. Oh,
yeah.
It's got Mark Ruffalo in it.
Yes, it does. That was what caught my eye. And then I thought, all right, wait a minute now. Nazis and Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah. Hugh Laurie, too.
When I say Nazis, by the way, I mean period war drama.
Right. No, yeah,
I'm not telling you. I just want to make that clear because, you know, they get punched. The Leftovers.
Oh, interesting.
A show I was in no way interested in watching in the
people
aftermath.
Love that show.
Yeah, the second season only, though.
In the aftermath of Lost, I refused because I'm still angry about Lost. But then following Watchmen, it made me think about watching it. And I have not.
I watched season one of it, stopped watching. Apparently, everyone loves everything after season one.
Can you watch just season two?
I have no idea. I never watched it.
I mean, I guess I could because I would just read and then do that. Okay, so anyway, that's one. Peaky Blinders.
Interesting, with Oscar winner.
Yeah, I think I've watched one.
I watched two? A couple of them and fell off of it as well.
Yeah.
But a long time ago.
And then we'll go with Beef.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
You've got Beef. Some good picks here.
Well, it's kind of bigger. I haven't watched very much.
Is that
I
it
thought or? My list was terrible coming into this, so thank you.
Yeah.
There's some others, but I'm going to go with those. I'm just sticking on
okay,
that.
Okay, so recap them.
All right, so we said The Leftovers, All the Light We Cannot See, Peaky Blinders, and Beef.
Give me one more.
The Gentleman.
What's
Netflix
that?
Show.
That's the TV version of the Guy Ritchie that was originally created as to be a show.
Oh, I just saw that on. Is Vinnie Jones in it?
Possibly. Giancarlo Esposito, the guy from Time Traveler's Wife.
Theo James, Charlie Hunnam. Oh, that's the movie. Sorry.
That's the movie, yeah.
That's
yeah.
the movie. It's like, wait a minute.
I love that movie. That was the last movie I saw before the pandemic.
Oh, I like the guy that's in this. What was that guy in?
Theo James is in the show. Vinnie Jones is in it. Oh, interesting. I thought everybody wasn't. All right. Giancarlo Esposito, Ray Winstone.
What was Theo James in that I liked?
Time Traveler's Wife.
White Lotus?
He was in White Lotus.
White Lotus. That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah, he was great. All right.
I think we need to go with this.
Yeah, let's go with that.
The Gentleman.
Yeah, okay. Let's go with that.
There we go.
The Gentleman, Josh.
I think that's good because I was, if not on the fence, then it might have been a while.
All right. Cool.
All right.
You will like it.
I'm sure. I loved the movie.
Yeah. Great Hugh Grant. All right, so there you go. So Ron is going to watch
Monarch, King of Monsters.
Sorry. I was like, oh. Yep. You could have said any show, and I would be like, yeah, that's the one. Monarch, I'm going to watch Drops of God, and Josh is going to watch The Gentleman. We're all going to watch at least one episode before next month's show and report
and
back.
And then we're going to come back and we're going to say what we thought of the episode and whether we're going to continue to watch it.
Right, like the patron pick.
I'm going to say this, two episodes.
Two episodes? Okay, it's a month. I can do two episodes. Yeah.
Pilots are often.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not a great example. They're figuring it out. So.
Yes. I mean, you're not necessarily wrong, but these days, the way TV's made now, they're not made like pilots anymore.
I mean, Connor's going to be one third of the season. You're going to be one third of the way through the show, but that's good. Yeah. Because I like two episodes. I like that too. I'm
what about
two
ER?
That is a fantastic pilot. That's almost a feature film.
Oh, so good.
It was a feature film script.
You yeah. set the tone, Mark.
What if we just watch that?
It's your unit.
What if we did ER just every episode from start to finish?
Should we just change this podcast into an ER rewatch podcast?
I don't think I'd need to watch it again. I just did it.
I mean,
I'm not saying I wouldn't.
I'm not saying no. It's 15 seasons of 25 episodes a season. It's a lot of don't take till we are retired.
Is it actually streaming anywhere?
Yeah.
What's it on?
It's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu?
I think.
ER is on Hulu and Max.
Oh, and Max.
And Apple. So it's streaming. No, it's on Vive under Apple. Yeah, it's streaming on Hulu and Max.
It is. It's 331 episodes, right?
We never finish it.
That's how many
months? I've done it three times.
331 months. That's how many years. That's 27 and a half years it would take us to do it.
I got an idea. Instead of watching ER, Anthony Edwards, George Clooney, 1984. Let's watch the original ER from 1984 with Elliot Gould.
It would take us into our mid-70s to finish doing that podcast.
God.
I mean,
what else are we going to do?
I'm going to say one word, and I don't need you to respond. I want you to think about it. Pivot.
ER season 2 averaged 35.7 million viewers.
Oh my God. Everyone watched it. Oh, it was so good. I'll never forget my first episode of ER. I was actually at my now wife's house. We were in high school or college, and it was the George Clooney pen in the kid's neck in the drainage thing in a tux with the helicopter. Like, it was that episode. I was like, what is this?
That was the episode where it blew up, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So. Okay, so we will come back next month with a report on our viewing.
On ER episode 1.
Yeah. Well, maybe. So that's the show. Thanks for listening. You can always go to ifanboy.com to hear all of our podcasts, not just this one, but our weekly comics review show, the Pick of the Week show. We have our monthly Booksplode and Talksplode episodes. Josh has a Talksplode coming up. And as always, you can listen to Android Faithful every Tuesday, where Ron talks about phones.
It's an exciting time in the world of Android right now. We just finished Mobile World Congress. It's fun.
What is the Android platform stance on small phones?
Like on shape?
Yeah, on size. Like, you know, every iPhone's getting bigger and bigger to the point
that we're holding. Android's got small phones, got big phones, whatever you want. Whatever you want, it's there.
What do I have to do to get you into a small Android?
What is the Android phone's platform, though?
The Android's platform or position is choice. Whatever you want, you can have.
Okay, but is that what you stand for?
Yeah, well, it's not what, it's what we believe in.
We'll be back next month. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
Okay, Eeyore.
I was trying to think of something to say, and I was like, I don't have it.
I got nothing.
I'm out of time. I'm just kidding. Anywhere else I'd be a 10. Is it my destiny to live? Of longevity. I'm just kidding. Where I see love, she sees a friend. What will it take for her to see the man behind the tan and fight for me? I'm just kidding. And I'm enough. And I'm great at doing stuff. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.